On this episode...
I'm a man first. I'm someone's son. I'm someone's uncle. I'm someone's brother. I'm someone's mentor. I'm someone's teacher. I'm an actor. These are all slices of me. And I also happen to be gay. That took me a very long time. As a matter of fact, when Michael and I talked about creating the series, he says, you know, Kevin, everyone's going to know. I said, well, I'm the only one who doesn't, so let's do the show, you know.
From the coveted corner booth in a little bar in the center of the Coachella Valley universe, welcome to another Big Conversation with Patrick Evans and Randy Florence. Gentlemen.
Thank you very much, Howard. Yes, we are here at Skip Page's little bar. My name is Patrick Evans. I am joined, as I am every week, by my steadfast and reliable co-host, Randy Florence.
I sound like a tool. You know, steadfast and reliable.
I thought it sounded more like a horse.
Well, I like that, too.
I feel like that was, if I had a horse, I would want them to be both steadfast and reliable.
This first minute of the podcast is always the thing that I get excited about. Because this is when I find out whether I'm coming back next week.
Our guest today is Kevin Spiritus.
Hello.
Who is the star of After Forever. And that is an Amazon Prime series. And the latest and final season.
Third and final season.
I think by the time our podcast is out, it will be already available to you. Because it came out on May the 8th. And this has garnered you, what, 4 or 5 Emmys? Is this 6, I think, the series?
Well, the series has 6 Emmys to its name. Best writing for 2 seasons. First season, we won Outstanding Drama, Short-Form Drama. I won Best Actor, Outstanding Actor in a Drama Short-Form. We won Outstanding Direction. We won Outstanding... supporting actress as well. And my late collaborator, Michael Slade, and I were very grateful for the acknowledgement. It was actually, in 2019, it was the first LGBTQA+ series, drama series, to ever win 5 Emmys across any platform.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
kind of cool.
It's a huge compliment to the quality of the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
And
so out of those 6 Emmys... I have 4.
4.
But who's counting?
But no one's counting.
You know.
Well, I think we are. You have 4.
We're counting. And that's why I'll be sitting in that seat next week.
That's right.
And I'll be over there saying I have no Emmys.
No Emmys. No Emmys.
So did you know when you were making that show that it was going to be that good?
Yeah.
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 I don't know why that question just hit me. So my collaborator and I used to work on Days of Our Lives together. Let me tell you this backstory. Yeah. And I don't know why that hit me so hard just now. Wow. Maybe because it's the final season. Or maybe because I've been drinking margaritas. I was on Days of Our Lives for about 8 years. And I moved to New York after the end of that run. And about a year later, I get a tap on the shoulder that says... Are you Kevin Spiritus? If you are, I used to write for you on Days of Our Lives. And I said, what's your name? Because, you know, the writers are always kept separate from the actors, so no one feels like there's, you know, favors or privilege to get more.
So because the actors might pass a $100 bill and say, hey, write me a better scene.
Please, I might
Don't
pass and say, let me write the scene, you know. Let me rewrite the scene. No, so anyway, Michael introduced himself, and we were talking, and I said... I said, what are you working on now? And he said, nothing, I'm just sort of taking a break. I said, you're not on any of the remaining soaps? That's kind of odd. Let's create something. Let's do something digital that's coming in. The big thing was web series. So he said, I'm not looking. And I said, I want to do a series about gay men who are not 30. And I told you this,
yes.
Patrick. He looked at me like I had reached into his brain and took out this subject. He said, call me. And so we started talking, and I knew at that point in my life, I was 50, I was single, and I was looking for love. And a dating show seemed, somewhat humorous to me. Drama about dating and every date going wrong, which had been happening to me. Because, you know, anyway, that world is crazy, and I said this to him. He said, well, why don't you have a partner now? What's the keeping you from... I said, have you eaten with me? I don't know. You guys ate with me. You can see I'm not that bad of an eater.
There was nothing offensive about the way you had the tacos.
And the taco, came out pretty clean.
I kind of tossed it up over my mouth, and whatever got inside my mouth is what I kept. I really, relationships are like, they're like comets. You know, they go away from the earth, and then they circle back, and you finally find something that you're in sync with. I just was out of sync at that point. And I asked him, quite honestly, I didn't really know Michael at that time. And I said, what about you? Are you in a relationship? And he said, I lost my partner 15 years about a year and a half ago, actually. And I said, I'm so sorry to hear that. Do you still talk to him? And he said, like I pulled something out of his head again, yes, I do. And I said, maybe we could create some sort of story where my character is widowed and, my husband's gone, and I'm looking for love, but I've got to navigate through the grief, and we can do that by shooting the present of where I am, my character is now. The past would show segments of their relationship and how it worked and how good they were together. And then the third element to the series is me conjuring him up and sort of working through the grief. And that just sort of, worked. And, he could be at this table right now and not be seen, and I'd be looking at him, and he'd be, pointing to one of you and going, it's the guy. He's the wrong guy. Or go with that guy. And I'm thinking that it's all me. It's all my character's thought process and working through. So that said, the show kind of wrote itself. And and you asked me.
Suddenly we're at a rave, but that's okay.
Suddenly, yeah. The bass. That's not the kind of music that's in my show, but I like it. anyway, so, yeah, there you go. Okay. Okay, so we're going to keep having that kind of rave music, and I'm okay with it.
That's the one thing about this podcast. We are live from a bar. There is going to be the occasional reminders that we're a bar. And wait until you hear Mo shake a cocktail. That is...
It was born from our truth. It was born from our desires and parts of our life. And, we took that particular part of his story, parts of mine, and we kind of married them together. And truthfully, there were people who came up to us and said, of course I'll help you with your finances. I went out and raised $100,000 for that first season. And don't ask me how I did it, because I don't even remember. I didn't threaten anybody, but I did raise money. And Michael said, I know nothing about raising money. And I said, well, I really know very little about I before E, except after C, or when sounding like whatever. He was the wordsmith. He was the wordsmith. But we had great ideas, and I knew if we put our heart and our truth forward, that in answer to your question, I just felt it was a story that was on point and perfect for that time. Nowhere, or very rarely, do you see middle-aged men and or women, gay or straight, on the canvas of storytelling. So that we had going for us, and. Yeah.
It was eminently relatable. And it was an audience.
It's about loss. It's not about gay love. It's about loss. We're all going to go through it. And the thing that I wanted to tell you this morning, I forgot to tell you, when we go through loss and we lose a relationship, a person, that relationship doesn't stop. You still have a relationship with that energy, with that person, with that that love or that non-love or that hate or that whatever happens when that person goes, you've got to work through that. You've got to get over that because they're going to still be in your head.
Oh, that's 100% true. I mean...
And that's what I think connected. So when Michael said to me, let's do this. And someone said, I'm going to give you money, Kevin, but just shoot the pilot and then sell it. I went... And let John Stamos play my character? Are you kidding? and let us not be able to run our own show? Are you crazy? But we knew what we wanted. We knew what we had to write. We knew how we... And it's short form. So every episode's about 7 to 12 minutes, mostly, for the first two seasons. There's one episode that's just under 20 minutes in the third and final season. But anyway, so that's... In answer to your question, I maybe kind of in the back of my mind knew or hoped that... What we had to say or offer would be so celebrated.
what you did know is it was important.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
it's important to us.
And the other part of that story that you told me today, full disclosure, Kevin was a guest on Eye on the Desert earlier, but you were talking about being at the awards, and you could see some of the folks that you worked with from Days of Our Lives,
yeah.
And they watched you and this series in that first award ceremony garner 5 Emmys, and you kind of looked over at them. There's a little something going on.
Well, I kind of looked at the audience, and I said, first of all, that whole weekend was such a dream state. You know, hey, pinch me. Is this really? We won 5, and we had been going up against another show and other festivals that were kind of like leading the way mostly. But our name was called many times after Forever, 5 times, and sure enough. So Mitchell Anderson, by the way, who plays my leading man, he retired. I think around 40, he went to Atlanta and he opened a restaurant. And Mitchell Anderson was on Party of Five and Doogie Howser, MD. And
oh, yeah.
He and I never worked together. We always were friends. I met him for about close to 40 years. And when Michael Slade said to me, so who do you see playing Jason? I said, Mitchell Anderson. We're friends? He goes, I said, we have a connection. Kevin, he's out of the business. I know, what a perfect comeback. He quits the business and he comes back and he's a star again. And I had called Mitchell and I said, you know, you and I never worked together, but wouldn't it be great out of all those times we went up against each other that we had something to do together? Read this script. He goes, Kevin, I'm not coming. I'm done. He has a restaurant called Metro Fresh. If you're in Atlanta, go to Metro Fresh.
Metro Fresh.
Delicious. And I said, no, really, you have to, you know, spoiler alert, he's dead in the series. I said, come play my fake dead husband. And he said, Kevin, so he read the script that night and called me the next day and he said, when do we start? And the great thing was we both got nominated for Best Actor. And I said, I just want you to know if they call my name, you're coming on stage with me. And here we are like Tony and Maria running up. I grabbed him and I said, get your ass up here. And, you know, I acknowledged him. And I thought it was pretty great that in 2019 I can say, here's my leading man. And it was a beautiful, you know, I shared it with him. And we just had this great connection. So that was something that I wanted to have available to us in a 12-day shoot. 12 days to run, you know, a whole series. So, you know, people get together and you put your arm on them. Oh, wait, don't. That's not my good side. And I really don't want you to touch me over there.
Well, you're my husband and my wife, so we touch each other and what, you know.
None of that. We just jumped in.
And this wouldn't have been possible without streaming. I mean, you weren't going to do a 12-minute show on CBS or anything, right?
Well, arguably there's 12 minutes of content on most CBS shows.
Yes, on a full night.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, you know,
it's not like you work for CBS or
right,
anything.
But, you know, at the time, we just looked at what was available. You know, if CBS or any other network or any other platform decides to do something else, maybe that's the next jump. But the trickle down here is that, so Michael and I wrote the series. We didn't sell it to anybody else. We kept it, you know, as our own. And we get these nominations, and 8 nominations for the first season. And we also, on this show, by the way, is Katie Huffman, who played Ula in the Broadway original show producers. We have Anita Gillette, Lenny Wolpe. Linda Pearl is in the third season. She's playing my therapist. But we've got this incredibly gifted and talented cast. And so after first season, you get all these nominations. Michael calls me up and says, I need to talk to you. I said, oh, what did I do now? You know, I said the wrong thing at an interview. What? And he said, I've been diagnosed with cancer. So the bittersweet thing about this whole series is that we're doing a show about loss. We're doing a show about what happens after loss. And Michael fought hard for a good 3.5 years and lost his battle just at the end of COVID. So we had the third season written and ready to go, and now it's coming out. So I know he's sort of organizing everything from another space and time.
But it must be, it's obviously very bittersweet
yeah.
to have this, and not have him there to see the final product.
Yeah, and I think that's what part of this has been. I mean, this last couple of weeks, I've been readying everything for the Amazon launch, and we're having a screening the night before, and just everything that comes up right now is After Forever, After Forever, After Forever, and I'm like, great, bring it on, interview this, you know, down here with you guys, and I can't help but go, what would he think? What would he be saying? So I have to kind of listen and catch my breath. It's bittersweet. It is bittersweet.
No, it's such a collaborative effort, and now you're kind of doing it solo, and that's got to be difficult.
It's difficult, and not unlike Brian, like your alter ego. I'm pissed. I'm pissed that he's gone.
Do you find yourself talking to Mike?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. Or I'll see a show on television, and I go, see, that's what we didn't do. I'm so glad. Or I'll hear him laughing, or he'll go, because we did. There was a couple of things that I would offer up. He goes, are you kidding? I said, no, it'll be great. He said, walk it through. Tell me where it gets to. So I would have to sell my point or sell my storyline over and over. And if it got to the end and it made him chuckle or it made sense, then we would keep it in.
But how often were you successful?
Michael turned me into a writer. I mean, I was an ideas person until then. I had great vision. I had great ideas for scenes and storyline. But he really taught me, you know, you've got to follow that line, that streak, wherever you're going, that avenue, until you can't go anymore. And if it gets you to where you're going, then you've won.
Now, had you always planned that the third season would be the conclusion?
I think, first of all, we have a situation where we have my late husband. How do you keep a dead person alive for so long without it being fresh and original? And I think, you know, the beginning of the grief, and the show, by the way, is told in a lot of flashbacks, so it's out of order a lot. But each episode has a little mini movie. It sort of goes out of order, it jumps down to LMNOP, and then it goes back to B, and then, I mean, it's really, and some of the people who we showed it to, be it's out of order, I hate that shit. Excuse me, that stuff.
It's okay, you can say shit on our podcast.
Oh, God damn it, I'm so glad. And, you know,
one of the least offensive things that's been said on our show.
We lost a lot of people to that. I just like to, you know, from beginning to middle to end.
Some people like the linear storytelling, and some
we are. We're just telling it out of order.
Out of order. Are you so? You sort of planned three seasons.
Three seasons,
and so without obviously giving away spoilers, we want people to go and watch the series. But you're happy with your character's arc?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there is a very interesting line. So, you know, Michael, having lost his partner and really gone through this particular journey, I've lost friends, I've lost grandparents, I've lost animals, I've lost my keys a lot. spit take from Patrick, thank you.
Gin dries quickly, it's fine.
I think I owe that part of the story to Michael. And he really had clarity on what it was like to receive, hey, do you want to sell your house now? You know, the moment his partner died. Or holding on to your anger is a way of holding on to the relationship. So my character goes through a lot of this. In the second season, which you can watch on Prime now, you can binge watch it each season. Take the drink away, Kevin. Each season is about an hour and a half, so you can binge it very quickly. In this season, it picks up a month after season two, where I was dumped by a person who I thought was going to be the next magical relationship. And he says to me, you're not over your late husband. You know, everything you talk about has Jason's name attached. He's at dinner with us. He's in the paintings. He's in the movies we see. You know, the character talks about him all the time. And he
is.
And he is. But he's not with him in a healed manner. So the guy I'm seeing in the series says, I'm just not into three ways. I'm sorry. So I go on a rant and a rage, and I go through the house and I throw stuff away. And when I go to, at the end of season two, you see me release his ashes into the sea. And it's a very beautiful moment. At the same time, you can do the physical, but if you're not psychically and mentally prepared, it's still not healed. So that happens. I turn around and I dump the ashes, and I turn around and there's Jason.
He's still there.
He's still there. So season three picks up, and everyone's telling me to go to a therapist, go talk to somebody. And I go, I don't need to talk to anybody. I'm talking to you. And, you know,
and enter Linda Pearl.
And enters the therapist. And there's some extraordinary... Linda and I happen to be friends. We've done a couple of shows together, and our relationship is, I'll call it therapeutic. We talk about everything from spiritual awakening, awareness, different ways of approaching your life, approaching your work, and our great loves and our great losses. And she also knew Michael. So when it came to filming, I said, what are you doing? You want to play my therapist? And she said, I'd love to. She's great. So there's some wonderful moments where my character really gets to exorcise the memory of Jason. And Jason is right there with me in therapy at times. And one of the great things is there's an episode where she says, if Jason were here, what would you say to him? So that's not only the first time I'm ever able to talk to him in front of somebody. It's what happens in that conversation that's outrageous. And then, because my anger is making me act out in so many different ways, in so many emotional outlets, that I'm not taking the right road, I'm taking the road not traveled, and I'm acting out at work. I'm screaming at employees. I'm thinking of things that are happening to me in my life, and I'm lashing out on the street at Jason. And he's not there. And people see me.
And they just think you're crazy.
I'm crazy. In New York, that's not really crazy.
Yeah.
So
Randy's never been to New York, so he doesn't know. But
oh, well, Randy.
People stand in the middle of the street and just scream?
Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. And by the way, New York is also another character in this beautiful show. It's like it holds the space for this to happen. And it's really extraordinary. And I have to give a couple shout-outs. So there's a beautiful friend of mine. Her name is Laura Barquette, and her late husband was actually at my high school. He was my high school. He was my year in high school, and I never met Laura. And it came to be that we crossed paths in New York, and it's her gorgeous five-story townhouse that is the set of After Forever. She's our executive producer, and she is... I could not have done any of this. We couldn't have done without her. She's just so... Laura, I love you. And congratulations on all your Tony nominations this week.
Let's talk about your career before...
Before after.
Yes, before after. Before after.
After.
Let's talk a little bit about Days of Our Lives.
Sure.
Because that was 8 years. And you said...
Oh, right.
You said that... You felt like after you won all those awards, you turned to somebody. You said they're going to ask me to be back.
Well,
on the show.
The night that we won the big one about being the outstanding drama, short form drama, I turned to Michael and I said, "You're not going to believe this, but I have a feeling they're going to take me back on the Days of Our Lives, and they're going to have me come out. They're going to have my character come out." He said, "They will never do that. That will be nuts." No.
Had that ever been a storyline before?
I don't think it had ever been a storyline ever. Now, they had gay characters. They had young kids who were gay or bi or non-binary, and they're trying all that out. But for someone who's established...
Right, you were established, I mean, eight years. 8 years on the show.
400-something episodes, right?
Something, I don't know. They had me saying stat and clear a lot. But I...
And you do that really well, but by the way.
It was pretty firmly established. Pretty firmly established that your character was straight.
It was never spoken about. It was just assumed.
Right.
And one day I get a call from the casting director. Her name comes up on the phone, and I go, "Hello." She goes, "Kevin, they'd like you to come back and come out." And she went, "What? How do you know?" I said, "What else would they have me do?" So it was just it was the next step, I think. I don't know. It was a full circle moment. I was no longer quiet about who I am and what I'm about.
And when did you come out?
Yesterday. I came out to Palm Springs last night.
Eye on the Desert.
He came out on Eye on the Desert. It was a groundbreaking episode for us. No, because you told me there's a story.
Yeah, when I went to I went to New York to do to pursue acting. This is, I guess, 2007, 2008. You know, there was a point in my life where I stopped compensating as, "Hey, I've got a girlfriend back," you know, whatever. It was none of that. But I just never, not spoke about it. You know, I never went, "Hey, I'm gay," or "Did you know I'm gay?" It just never. It's not what I lead with. It's a slice of my life. It's a part of who I am. I'm a man first. I'm someone's son. I'm someone's uncle. I'm someone's brother. I'm someone's mentor. I'm someone's teacher. I'm an actor. These are all slices of me, and I also happen to be gay. That took me a very long time. As a matter of fact, when Michael and I talked about creating the series, he says, "You know, Kevin, everyone's going to know." I said, "Well, I'm the only one who doesn't, so let's do the show, you know."
But you didn't feel like you had kept it? I mean,
it was no longer silenced. It was no longer secretive, and I'd worked through all my shame about it and all my homophobia and, you know, inner homophobia. I think for me, it was doing this play. And I was playing a gay man who is HIV positive in the story. It's a two-person play. I sort of stepped into this play. I got a lot of attention, and then Soap something came out to interview me, and he said, "Is there anything you don't want to talk about?" I said, "No, if I don't want to talk about it, I won't talk about it." "So, what's it like to be an out gay actor playing gay roles? Is that all you're going to do anymore?"
Question number one.
I said, "So wait, hold on. What are you asking me? Are you asking me if I'm gay? Are you asking me if I'm out? Are you asking me, what are you asking?" And I did the whole explanation of, this is a slice of who I am. This is what I'm about. So, thank God he didn't scare me back into the closet. I mean, it was like, it came at me. But what's extraordinary is that interview was released on National AIDS Day, December 1st. And I think they kind of put it out there every year. It's on the internet, so you can find it.
It's available.
But do you know the amount of kids and the amount of people who wrote me and said, "That was the most beautiful thing, and thank you for saying..." And I found that I was welcomed to a place that I was so scared of being. And what year are we in?
It's 2024 now.
Thank you. So 2023, the Hollywood Museum honored me with the Trailblazer Award of 2023. And I said, "What's this for?" "Well, you created a series. And then you also went back to a series. And you played your role and came out in that role. And got nominated for another Emmy. I mean, what is it you're doing?" I said, "I'm just speaking and acting and living for my truth as best I can." So that, to me, was blazing enough, I guess.
So, with the return to Days of Our Lives and this...
It was a three-month arc, yeah.
Okay, the story arc. How involved were... You say they always keep the writers separate, but were you involved at all in the, kind of the telling of your character's story of coming out?
You know, I wasn't involved in the telling of it, but I was able to speak to the head writer, and I said, "I have some family members who have gone through this, who have, you know, relatives outside of my immediate family. I'm the only gay one in my family. I think
that you know of.
I know of.
That we know of.
Yeah, but I said to Ron, the head writer, I said, So what is it you're going to do with this guy? Because I had only witnessed, first of all, anybody who's in a marriage or in a relationship and they are not living their truth, I can understand that. I can also understand that it's hard to not live your truth and, you know, be stuck in a situation that you may not want to be in. So my higher self holds the space for anybody who has that going on to find their peace and to find their way and to acknowledge that and move through that. So there is a family member who called me up one day. I was actually coming back from having packed up my house in Vegas. I was doing hairspray in Vegas, and I was done with that run, and I'm driving, and the phone rings. I said hello to this cousin, and he says, how you doing? I said, good. How about you? Are you ready to come out? And he said, yes. It's a hard conversation.
How many conversations have like that have you had in your life?
Two. One was repeated because I didn't hear anything he said. No, how much bravery?
I mean, it doesn't get any more real
it
than
doesn't.
That.
It doesn't. And then I thought, you know, you've got to be, I said, congratulations, you found your truth. You found your comfort of being who you are. Now be good to my cousin because I will kill you if you're not. And that's the question, and that's the conversation I had with the head writers. Because I didn't want it to be about a lie. I didn't want it to be that I didn't love this woman. I mean, how do you erase 8 years of, oh, he was an asshole, or he was, you know, he's a bastard. Now, they had some comedy thrown in there, and I came back onto the show, and my wife, Patrika Darbo, who played this, I mean, she was just great to work with, Craig, I know you are having an affair. I said, Nancy, you are the only woman in my life. I'm not having an affair with another woman. What makes you think that? Honest.
The
and
truth.
To the point.
Yep.
And more is revealed. It was a very, very interesting thing that they did. I thought it was a wonderful opportunity for them to give this it was great.
And you were very happy with the final product.
Yeah, I actually was. I mean, everyone was supportive of it. They thought the person they had me falling for, who's still on the show. He's a character. He played a conniving, you know, one. Let's take Craig for all his money and
wait on a soap opera.
Absolutely,
this comes as a shock to me.
Somebody conniving,
but I actually got to walk away at the altar for coming to my senses and really. And there's some beautiful moments with the girl who plays my daughter and you know, Daddy, I'm sorry you didn't find your love, and I just said it hurts so much, and so I thank the guy for helping me find my truth, and then I send him off. Or I leave him. And I thank my wife for allowing me to find my truth and for not... Well, in the soap world, it's all very fast.
Yeah.
Wrap it up. But, you know, I thank her for being so dear and so kind to me.
What was the reaction to the episode?
Well, everybody... it was kind of split down the middle. There was, oh my God, of course I knew it. How could they be? How could he ever love her? And blah, blah. That's one side. The other side was, what a great story. Look at, and he's finding his truth. And that's what you see is the healing of our world, our America. Our content is reaching out, and it's seeping through the ethers outside of the television screen and outside of the platforms. And it's touching people.
So how did it impact your career? I mean, you were working in L.A.
Yep.
And... your character was straight, and you had not come out. Mm-hmm. How did it impact your career?
Well,
once you did?
The only thing that has impacted my career so far, since After Forever and since the coming out of Dr. Greg Wesley, is the fucking pandemic and the goddamn strikes.
So there's awful.
But
little,
other than that,
yeah, other than that,
I say that like it affected everybody. I'm not unique in the situation, but I had just climbed that mountain, and the mountain crumbled. Climbed up the mountain again. Michael dies. Okay, climbed up the mountain again, and there's two strikes. And right now, you know, I'm writing another script with a new partner. There'll be other stuff. There'll be other stuff. Life is too full of story to. And then look at what we've got going on. Matt Bauman is, you know, what was.
I forgot the title.
Travelers. Anyway, he is now setting a new course for us in his show and his series.
Talk a little bit about your career before Days of Our Lives, and you're also a very talented singer.
Thank you.
You like, you know, come from the musical theater world. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about that, you had a great run in that world before transitioning to L.A. and doing the soap opera stuff.
Thank you. I all my life I wanted to be Gene Kelly. Growing up, I mean, that's all we had on television. We had three channels. I would stay up and wait for the late show, the Bijou Picture Show in St. Louis, Missouri, and it would, you know, I'd wait for those musicals to come on. And I just wanted to be Gene Kelly or Fred Astaire, and I can't even tell you how many pictures I knocked off the wall dancing and cartwheeling and flipping down the hall. And at 18 years old, I went to, I was 17, I was turning 18. I went to a semester of school in Dallas at SMU. And, you know, I was a freshman. Freshmen's are supposed to take 4 years to graduate and, you know, get all the courses and do all the classes, and I was not getting handed anything, you know, talent show even. I wasn't being cast in the dance or the musicals, or I was very frustrated because I was at Six Flags over Mid-America, and I was a star at Six Flags.
But at Southern Methodist University.
I was a freshman, and I was not on the totem pole as a senior. And I just remember being very, very upset. I was discouraged. And one day, the dance teacher, one of the dance, he was an assistant to the teacher, like he was the next teacher. And he, Jerry Bevington, he was my first, I'll call him my first older gay brother. He was very, very, very attentive to where my spirit was moving. And, you know, back in 1980, 81, I was so far back in the closet. And you don't, in that day and age, I was 10 years behind my my coming of age, really, because I didn't have that experience so much in high school. And sure enough, he said, "What is wrong with you?" And I said, "I don't think I should be here. I think I should be in New York." He said, "You're right. You should. Now, do not fire Jerry." I think he's gone from the school anyway. He said, "I think you're absolutely right. You should get the hell out of here." And 3 months later, I'm there. I'm waiting for some kind of audition. I wanted to be in Chorus Line since the time I saw it come through St. Louis as a kid. And I'm walking by the theater one day with a friend of mine. And he says, "I hear they're having auditions for that show." I said, "What? What?" He said, "Yeah, take your picture and resume to the stage door. And tell them I told you. If knock, knock. If you think I'm right for your show, I'm not equity, but here's my picture and resume. I'd love to audition." And sure enough, I got an audition, and I went on the tour of A Chorus Line at 18.
First professional job.
That's my first professional Broadway show, yeah. It was amazing. And my friend Troy Garza, who was my dance captain, who taught me the show, lives out here in the desert now. We stay in touch. He's great. We laugh about that. So, yes, yes.
I want to go back a little further. Born and raised St. Louis.
Yeah.
What was the path that ended up bringing you into acting?
There's a woman. Her name is Joanne Smiley. She was my fourth grade music teacher, and she is now the mayor of Clarksville, Missouri.
And she and I are still in touch. She was magic. She saw that I wanted to sing. She saw that I wanted to perform. And she just sort of held the space magically. Yeah, I mean, she's the one who would say, you can do this if you want.
And was the family good with the direction you were going?
Half and half. My mom was. My dad wasn't at the time. I think there was the, you know, what's my boy doing in dance class type of thing. But I was a gymnast, so he'd be very excited when I was on the high bar or, you know, flipping on the floor, not breaking the pictures on the hallway floor. Yeah.
It takes a great physicality to do that. I mean, the gymnast background.
I think the thing that's wonderful about the relationship with my family is now, my focus and my intention eventually paid off. It eventually took its course, and they can see how much I love it and how much it loves me, and I think they can't deny it.
And that was enough for them.
Absolutely,
when they saw that?
And you know, it doesn't hurt when my dad. I saw your kid on TV yesterday. You know, he loves that. Dad loves it, or he loves being. He loves flipping through channels and goes, I saw you on Friends. Did you? Was that you on Friends? Yeah, Dad, that was me. You were the doctor, right? Yeah. They had me go on play opposite Dr. Yep. Drake Ramore.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. It's who I am. And just like anything in anybody's life where you are maybe not accepting of something at first, the time in which it takes does not always happen immediately. But I think everybody's sort of found their alignment with what I like doing. And if they like it too, God bless them.
Well, we wish you a great deal of success with season three, the final season of After Forever. And congratulations. I mean, it's a tremendous success now.
Thank you.
And I think you've built something really brilliant. And we look forward to whatever project is next for Kevin, and I trust that you'll come back and spend some time with us. Tell us about it.
We love that.
I also want to say one other thing. If I was going to play one character in a musical.
Please don't.
Corky Collins.
Corny.
Corny Collins would be that character.
Oh, really?
Tell me about how that came about. I mean, I think that's one of the greatest characters in musicals.
Mark Shaiman and Scott Whitman wrote one of the greatest musicals.
Hairspray.
Hairspray.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went to see Hairspray on Broadway. I was, I guess we were all on hiatus or something. We had a week off from the soap. And this is very early on. And I don't know if you are aware, but the woman who played my wife on television in Days of Our Lives, her name is Patrika Darbo, and she's not your size too. She's a woman of size, and she's very beautiful. And we became television's number one non-conventional couple. And not unlike Tracy Turnblad and Link Larkin, there was someone who was thinner and someone who was not. So we're watching this show. I'm like, okay, first of all, it's the musical Hairspray. It's fantastic, and I'm loving it, and Harvey was great, and Dick Latessa, and I'm so thrilled for Mark and Scott. They're friends of mine. And then it came time for me to audition for the show. I was up for the tour, and it didn't happen for some reason. You know, and I know Jerry Mitchell from early on. And sure enough, I did get to meet Jack O'Brien, and he said, that was a wonderful audition, Mr. Spiritus. Thank you. And I went, not good enough. However, next month goes by, and I'm now the standby for Hugh Jackman in The Boy from Oz, which I gotta say,
that's pretty big.
I never went on for Peter Allen, but I worked opposite him in a couple of different roles. But that was an amazing year, and then I get a call when that's done to go to Vegas and to audition for Corny Collins. I went, okay. And that's where I got to work with Jack and Jerry and Scott and Mark. And it's just a great show. It's a great show. It's great music.
And a great character.
And what he represents. And you know, that was And it brought me closer to those people who I really loved and really enjoyed working with. So, Corny Collins.
Thank you for that. I hope to be welcome. Corny someday.
Well, I will. I'll see what I can help you out with there.
Thank you. Well, thank you. Know, it was very serendipitous. I saw you at the Purple Room. We chatted for a little bit, and
well, those guys, they're great. Cast Party is.
Yeah, Cast Party was so much fun. And it was fun to see you. Yeah. But never have I been so happy about, because I just kind of casually said, "Hey, I do a podcast. Would you be on?" And you're like, "Yeah," because I got this thing, and you know, the third season was coming.
I did. I mean, you were so gracious and. He told me I sounded really good, so anyone who tells me that.
He did sound, he sounded great. Sounded terrific.
Podcast worthy.
You know, Billy Stritch is a friend, and Jim Caruso, and I've known them for years. And, you know, I live in L.A., and I love to come down and support them if they're here. And we don't have that entertainment so much anymore
in
L.A.
Yeah, the L.A. entertainment scene is very different.
It's
a lot of it's moved here.
Exactly right.
Well, so, Kevin Spiritus,
thank you
so much. We wish you great success with the final season of After Forever. Everybody, find it. It's on Amazon Prime. Binge the first two seasons, get yourself set, and then watch the third.
Kleenex is not included.
But it should be. Hey, thank you so much for coming down and doing this. This has been terrific. Absolutely terrific. On behalf of John McMullen, our producer, Mr. Kevin Spiritus, our great guest today, and my co-host, Randy Florence, thank you for tuning into this edition of Big Conversations, Little Bar. I'm Patrick Evans. We'll be right back here next time.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Big Conversations, Little Bar. Recorded on location at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert, California, the center of the Coachella Valley universe. This program is a production of the Mutual Broadcasting System. All episodes are available from BigConversationsLittleBar.com or from most major podcast portals, including Apple, Spotify, and Amazon Music.